Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes, villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did,
so wise you are,
was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens. I am Ben Avery, your guide to the stars.
And I am Steve MacDonald, your gazetteer to the planets.
I've never heard that word before.
Gazetteer?
Oh. Is that spelled like gazetteer?
Yes, but it's pronounced correctly.
Interesting. Yeah. No idea what that word is. So this is the episode where Ben explains his ignorance of vocabulary words. No, actually, this is a cool episode, a fun episode, because it features someone who's not a stranger or an alien.
Yeah, and much less of me, which is always preferable.
And still none of Dr. Jace, sadly. He is coming back from his vacation. Actually, I saw some pictures on Facebook today of him on the plane. Apparently, the plane's wheel blew out or something. And
was he on the wing of the plane, like tearing at the engine?
Yeah, there's a gremlin on the plane, and no one will believe Dr. Jace. So he will be back for our next episode. Our next episode will be the Batman The Dark Knight Rises instant reaction episode.
We will
have seen that movie at that point. The three of us will return together and we will talk about the either greatness or great disappointment that movie is. And but for this episode, Steve, for right now, you can just kind of kick back and relax. And I can also,
into the background.
At this point, kick back and relax. We're going to step back in time to a point in time just a little bit earlier today. I recorded an interview with Paul Acey.
Go back in time.
Steve, this is why you weren't in on the interview.
It would be like this the entire time.
Yeah. So anyway, Batman.
Which is your favorite Batman sound effect? Is it Bam or is it Wham?
So anyway, he is the author of the book, God on the Streets of Gotham. And so we will just go ahead and jump right into that. And then we will come back to the present. And Steve and I will open up the mailbag.
All right. See you later, everybody.
All right. Well, all you strangers and aliens, I am here now with Paul. And I should have asked you how to pronounce your last name before. AC. What's that again?
It's pronounced AC. Just think AC/DC without the DC.
All right. So Paul Acey, that's spelled A-S-A-Y. And he is the author of the book God on the Streets of Gotham. And you'll never guess, you know, what it's about. It's about God and Batman. And so, and you know, we have this month is big for Batman. So I saw this book, was pointed out to me by one of our listeners, actually, just in time for me to write an article about it for Family Fiction. And then to, get a hold of Paul, and he is here with me right now. So go ahead
thanks
and say,
so much
say
for,
hello.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me here. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So, yeah, so let's talk about what this book is about, and then we can kind of I don't want to just talk about, you know, all the points of the book, but
sure.
But if you could just give a brief overview of what this book is.
Yeah, you know, God on the Streets of Gotham is really about sort of looking at kind of the Batman character and the mythos that's sort of grown over the last 70 some years, but really concentrating on kind of the Christopher Nolan movies and trying to figure out whether there are any spiritual themes, any Christian themes we can draw from the character. And even though he's a very dark character, and particularly in these Christopher Nolan movies, you can tell that he's a very dark character, I think that there's some interesting things that you can draw from his stories. You know, in my opinion, when you look at superheroes in general, a lot of them have these pretty strong Christ-like attributes. You know, they come and they're there to sacrifice themselves and save the day and save humanity. You know, I think Superman is probably the best example of that. He was actually written, I think, as sort of a Christ-like figure, sort of this Christ-like avatar. And Batman, he's just not like that at all. He is a dark character. He's flawed. He's troubled. And to me, I think that that makes him feel a lot more in some ways like us, you know, who are walking through this very imperfect world. We're all so flawed. We're sinners. We struggle with a lot of stuff. And yet we're called, like Batman is, to do great things. And so that's kind of what the book is really about. And so we just sort of unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, I've heard people say that Superman is, it's hard to relate to Superman because he's just so good and so powerful. But Batman, he's human and he's relatable. And that really is, when I was reading the book, that just the impression I got is, okay, there's this, this is a lot like, you know, my story or you know, the human story that we're... dealing with things as a human.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things that makes it so for him a little bit is that he is human. You know, he can't see through walls. He doesn't have this super strength. He doesn't turn green or spin webs or anything like that. He's just a normal guy like you and me. He's obviously a lot richer than you and me. We could probably figure out a lot of cool things to do with the kind of cash that he has laying around. I might use it a little more selfishly than he does, but there's still that human aspect to him, and that makes him, I think, more relatable. I mean, he gets injured just like we do. He hurts. He's very vulnerable to all the stuff that we are, and I think that makes him someone, even though he was always written as a pretty scary character in a way, someone who we weren't really supposed to entirely trust, it helps us understand his world a little bit better.
Yeah. You mentioned he's scary. I actually was listening to a podcast earlier this week. They were talking about Batman Begins and how when Batman first does a Batman thing where he's actually dressed as Batman, it's filmed like a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, like he's jumping in and out. The criminals are all scared and running. And it's filmed like it's from Alien, you know, from 1979 right there.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at the very, very early Batman comic books, you know, he looks... I mean, I think he was drawn to look almost demonic. You know, you got these pointed ears and these weird eyes and, you know, the big old cape and everything. He is not somebody who, you know, if we didn't understand, because Batman's been with us for so long, we've sort of gotten used to what he looks like and how he acts and all that sort of stuff. And so we kind of forget how scary he really is intended to be. But if you saw someone, you know, walking down the street... like Batman, I think you'd be tempted to run the other way, you know?
Yeah, it takes a special kind of, or a different kind of person to actually put that kind of costume on. And actually, like, not just because, oh, I'm wearing a costume, I'm going to a party, or I'm going to a convention, but
yeah,
I'm going to use this costume to, as my uniform that I'm going to wear every night.
Every night. And how do you wash that thing? I mean, if he's wearing it every night, you got to think that, well, I'm not even going to go there. But
well, that's what Alfred's there for.
That's what Alfred's he's got that figured out.
He takes care of the laundry. He takes care, you know, of the wardrobe. So the book, I enjoyed reading the book, and it reminded me, one of the things that kind of got me into, I shouldn't say got me into it, but that first opened my eyes to the idea of things in pop culture having significance in Christianity is a book that I read when I was, or looked at, I should say, when I was 4 or 5 years old. It was The Force of Star Wars. And I was just kind of taking all these elements from that first Star Wars movie and applying them to, you know, Christian life and Christian living and stuff. And that's really what this book is, kind of like a flashback to that, only it's just a little deeper, I think. and maybe it's, you know, the age I am now. But
yeah, probably if you were 4 or 5 back then, you probably didn't get all the nuances, maybe.
No, of course, if I was 4 or 5, I wouldn't be seeing these movies either.
That's very true.
So, yeah, you focus mostly on the Nolan movies,
yeah.
Which I liked. I thought it was an interesting choice. Is that, well, I mean, why was that?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a couple of reasons. One, I think, is it was a pretty pragmatic decision. You know, those are the movies that have done so well at the box office. Most people, you know, who are looking at books, they are familiar with those Nolan movies, probably more than any of the others. You know, I think it takes a real a Batman geek to have watched, you know, the early Adam West movie and even some of the you know, the Tim Burton Batman movies, they're a little bit old now, and I would think that some younger readers probably wouldn't have seen them. So part of it was pragmatic. But the other thing that really attracted me, I think, to Nolan's Batman particularly, is that he felt very true to the Batman character that you read about in the comic books in some ways. You know, when you look at Tim Burton's Batman, he was, I think, in some ways, even though Nolan's movies are grittier and darker and more disturbing in some ways, the character for me is a bit lighter than Keaton's Batman. I think that he feels a little bit more disturbed, I guess is the word. Still very cool, but you can, he doesn't have really some of the moral checks that you would expect from Batman, I think. You know,
you mean Keaton doesn't have those moral checks?
Yeah, Keaton really doesn't. And you can see that kind of, I don't know how familiar you are with the movie, but you know, in the Bell Tower scene where he's chasing the Joker up, I mean, he's throwing bad guys off, you know, these ledges all over the place.
Well, and in Batman Returns, he puts a bomb down a bad guy's pants. And walks away with a smirk, you know.
Exactly. You know, and that's stuff that we know from the comics. You know, Batman just doesn't kill ever. And so because of that, I was drawn to Nolan's Batman that really, I think, retained both the darkness of the character, but I think kind of the moral goodness of the character too. Sure, he's flawed. Sure, he's troubled. But you know that he's trying to do the right thing. You know that he's trying to save Gotham. I mean, that's what his desire is. And you can really feel that. Where, you know, Keaton's Batman to me feels a little more like his Batman persona may be more of a mental type of thing. For me, Nolan's Batman, as Christian Bale so wonderfully plays him, it's almost a more spiritual call, I feel.
Yeah, the one thing that I got that I liked from Nolan's Batman movies is it feels to me like there's Bruce Wayne, but he plays two parts. He's playing Batman and he's playing Bruce Wayne. You called it out in the book too, where you mentioned exactly what I'm saying here is, you know, he's wearing two different masks. And in Batman Begins, Rachel, she says, you know, well, Batman is the real you or whatever. But
I think she's wrong.
Yeah, me too. I mean, she, you know, even though they say it in the movie, I don't feel that way at all, because I love the way he plays Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. I love the way he's playing the part of Bruce Wayne and playing the part of Batman and trying to figure all this out, especially in Batman Begins, where he's just trying to figure out what in the world he's doing and how he's going to do it. And
And when you're familiar with the comics, I mean, you can see sort of that struggle. It's very rare that you see, you know, Bruce Wayne or Batman without a mask in a way. But every once in a while, in a few of the graphic novels that I've read, every once in a while you see a glimpse of just almost him reverting back to kind of the scared little boy that he once was, you know, where he's struggling to figure out what he's about, you know? Because we know that when he's playing Bruce Wayne, we know what Bruce Wayne is about. He's this playboy millionaire who goes off with all the beautiful models and buys up restaurants and is completely irresponsible. We know that's not the real Bruce Wayne. Batman, he is designed to be very intimidating and scary, mm-hmm. and he is this persona that's been completely fabricated to do a purpose, to attack evil within Gotham City. We know that's a persona as well. And so you have what's left, you know, a Bruce Wayne who very rarely gets to go out, but is trying to balance these worlds and trying to really work through his masks to do some good. You know, and in some ways, I think we all do that a little bit. You know, I think that we all have masks that we wear for different duties and different people and different jobs.
Yeah.
And I think that because we understand that we have to wear, we have to be different people at different times, I think we kind of understand that sort of schism that takes place within Bruce Wayne's character.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Christian Bale does a great job of portraying that, and just you can, he does, he makes it more relatable, I think, than Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton broods well.
Yes. Yeah. I gotta say that I did really enjoy him as both, you know, Batman and Bruce Wayne. But in terms of really getting to the character, Christian Bale really does it for me.
Well, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
So, and don't feel bad if you don't have something right away, because I can cut out any awkward pauses or anything.
All right, that's good.
But you mentioned some of the other movies in your book, the Burton movies and the Schumacher movies, and you used you mentioned Batman Forever and used the adjective forgettable. Okay, for Batman Forever, and so here I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to have you do some more one-word reviews for these other Batman movies. All right.
My goodness.
Yeah. So just the first word that comes to mind when so Batman Forever, forgettable, or you could give me another word if you want, but when you think of these movies, what comes to mind? So like Batman 1966 with Adam West.
Silly.
Okay. And then the Batman 89.
Dark.
Okay, Batman Returns.
That's sort of cheated.
Yeah, that's okay. Batman Returns.
Sexy.
Interesting.
Well, Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, you just have that sensuality that goes along with that movie, and I think it sexy and disturbing.
Yeah, well, and that does bleed over into Penguin too.
Yeah, I mean
he's just perverted.
So dark, and really, that's of all the movies that we talk about. That's the one that's hardest for me to watch because it's just so dark and so disturbing. So,
okay, so Batman Forever.
Mm-hmm.
You can stick with forgettable. That's not a cheat.
Yeah, I think we're going to go with forgettable.
See, that's funny because, you know, when we were talking about the Batman movies in our last podcast, the three of us, Dr. Jason, Steve, and I, we like that one. We have fond memories of that one. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, I just couldn't really, it had a certain charm to it. You know, like I say, I think that I would rather watch Batman Forever than Batman Returns in some ways. And Jim Carrey was kind of a kick as the Riddler, but yeah, I gotta say, there's not a whole lot that I remember about it, to tell you the truth.
The thing that sticks out in my mind with that is just all the laughter. With Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey both just, ugh.
Yeah. You know, one thing that makes me mad about that movie, Tommy Lee Jones felt just like he was wasted in that movie. I mean, he was such a good actor. And if my memory serves, I mean, he wasn't too far away from The Fugitive after that, right? And he just cackles his way through that entire thing. So.
And I feel like he's trying to be Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Or even Cesar Romero, but I wish that they would have played it where he's the dark guy. You know, he's got the split personality, and then you have Jim Carrey coming through, and who's just crazy, and let them play off each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you saw The Dark Knight, you saw what potential Two-Face really had for a deep, dark, fun character. I mean, he wasn't too fun in The Dark Knight, but you can definitely see that they wasted that character in that movie.
All right, so Batman and Robin.
Abomination?
All right, yeah, okay. Batman Begins?
Oh, man. Fantastic, wonderful.
And Dark Knight?
Superlative. You know, I think that, again, I sort of have a weird reaction. I think that I enjoy Batman Begins, watching Batman Begins more than The Dark Knight. But The Dark Knight is, I think, the best superhero movie ever made to this point. You know, it is just spot on with everything they do. A hard movie to watch sometimes, but spot on.
It's long, too.
Oh, my goodness. You know, the new one is going to be 3 hours.
I wondered. So what are you expecting from this new one?
You know, it's going to be an interesting movie, I think. In the trailers, they put me a little bit on edge, you know, for Batman's fate. I think it's going to be a good movie. And as a matter of fact, I've actually read some stuff. Some reviewers have actually already seen it. And there are rumblings that it should... It's probably the best picture out this year so far and could get an Oscar nomination. So I'm expecting that it's going to be pretty good. But there's that sort of uncertainty kind of hanging over Batman's head, I think, whether he's going to make it to the credits alive, you know?
And yeah.
As a fan, that's hard to sort of deal with. And I know that you're really aware of kind of the Bane arc in Nightfall, where Bane was probably Batman's, you know, most horrific enemy in some ways, and that he broke his back. And you wonder whether they're leading up to a pretty dark ending with this.
Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, from the title.
Yeah.
It feels like, okay, we're going somewhere different, you know. And I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the score. They're streaming the score over at Empire Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it... There's some moments in that score that feel more upbeat. I don't know. I think it'd be a nice, an interesting thing if it ended like on a, even if he dies, you could end it on a hopeful note.
Yeah. And I think that may be the way they go, and he may make it just fine out of this movie. for my purposes, it feels very encouraging, because it feels like a lot of the themes that I talk about in the book, Gods on the Streets of Gotham, it feels like some of those may come to fruition in this. And you never know until the movie comes out. I haven't seen the movie yet, of course, but when you talk about even the title, The Dark Knight Rises, I mean, there's something encouraging and uplifting and almost spiritual about that. You hear, you know, talks about you know, preserving the faith of the people of Gotham, even the idea of him sacrificing himself. You know, in the trailer, you hear Catwoman tell him, "Why don't you just leave already? You've sacrificed everything for these people." And he goes, "Not everything, not yet." And you know, as Christians, that has deep resonance within us, because you know, the story that we've wrapped our whole lives around, you know, that's the centerpiece of our faith, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, and that whole, you know, Christ saying, greater love is no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friend. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, does it, you know. And that becomes, you know, part of the Christian life is sacrifice. And not necessarily, not that everyone dies martyrs, but...
No, but you see in Batman, and you see, of course, in a lot of other superhero stories as well, the idea of not only laying down your life for a friend, but for a stranger and for people who might not necessarily deserve it. You know, I think that's one of the things that I'm drawn to again and again when I sort of deal with these stories, is just the idea that, you know, the people of Gotham do not always treat Batman very nicely. The last time we saw him in The Dark Knight, he was running from the law. Carrying the sins of the city on his shoulders, so to speak, and yet he's still willing to sacrifice, you know, who he is and what he is for the people. And I think that there's something, you know, insanely powerful about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So we've talked about Batman a lot here. And you were mentioning earlier that you'd seen our poll on our, mm-hmm. our website. Who do you think the best overall Batman villain is? and as of right now,
I just voted, by the way.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Maybe I should refresh my browser then. as of right now, Joker's in the lead with, let's see, did you vote for Joker? No. Okay.
I did vote for Joker.
You did? Okay. So, Joker's in the lead with 59% of the votes. That's 16 votes. You know, and really, I went through and just tried to get and include as many villains as possible.
You have a lot of villains here. Yeah, I'm very impressed.
Of course, there's Egghead. No one voted for him.
But, yeah, I'm surprised he's not higher, to tell you the truth.
You know, and then there's Talon, who's from the new Batman from the new 52. Series. That's the Parliament of Owls or something like that. I'm not reading Batman right now from there, but it's a new villain they've created specifically for the kind of the kickstart with the new 52. So Bane gets a vote. Professor Hugo Strange gets a vote. That's actually my vote.
Hugo Strange really? Yeah. So you're a Hugo Strange guy, huh?
Well, part of it comes from just having a comic with him in it when I was little and reading it over and over and over again. And he just seemed nasty and mean. And he knew everything about Batman. And
everything.
I mean, the comic I had with Hugo Strange was he rebuilt a Wayne Manor of his own that exactly duplicated the Wayne Manor and built robots that exactly duplicated Dick Grayson and Alfred. Wow. And the robots kept attacking him, and so he destroyed one, and he thinks, oh no, I just threw Robin down some stairs and he broke his neck, and then he turned around and it's gone, and then he's there again, you know, and so he's just doing all this stuff to drive him crazy so he can take his place. I mean, it's a pretty elaborate plan, you know, but yeah, and then Red Hood has a vote, and Mr. Freeze has two votes.
My understanding was Red Hood was the Joker. Is that right? Am I spoiling anything there?
Well, Red Hood was the Joker, but then someone else came back as Red Hood.
Oh, God.
I mean, there's... So... Yeah, and then there's himself, and that's... I threw that in there, and that was almost my vote, but I just couldn't not vote for Professor Strange. But, but that's got 15% of the vote. That's second place.
Yeah, I think that's a really fascinating result, to tell you the truth. And, you know, I can see the validity to that. When you look at Batman as a character, you know, he obviously has some issues that he's dealing with. He has unresolved parental issues, and he's struggling with, I think, what it means in some ways to be a hero and how he can manifest that. But for me... You know, I could never say that he was the biggest Batman villain. I think that from my take, he is a guy just like the rest of us, just doing the very best that he can. He feels this very strange call that he doesn't necessarily understand. He feels a compulsion to help people. And he is just trying to follow that out, even though he doesn't exactly know what he's following. And I think that that's a very human thing. So I go with Joker myself.
Yeah. So let's talk Joker. What's the appeal to Joker?
Man, there's a lot. I think he is such an amazingly interesting character. Let me back up. I think that one of the things that's appealing about Batman is that he is so flexible. He changes with the times very much. As we go through his story arc. And I think there's a little bit of Joker in that same vein, where as time has gone on, he started out as dark, and then he became almost just like a merry prankster who really didn't do anything. And lately, he's become a very, very dark character.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in my book, he's about the closest character that I see to complete and utter evil. You know, not only in really the Batman saga, but maybe within the world of superhero-dom in its entirety. He is just, to me, he represents just sort of that nihilism, that the world, that the universe doesn't have any meaning, and that because it has no meaning, we are allowed to do everything and anything that we want to do. I think one of the things that attracts us to him and attracted me to that story is that, you know, that's a sensation that we get more and more in our world today, where we hear a lot about this cold and dark universe that we live in, where things just don't make sense. You know, we know of people who get sick or get hurt, and we know they don't deserve it. And it seems so unfair, and we wonder, how can that be in a world where there's a kind and just and loving God? And that's a really hard question for Christians to answer. And I think that makes Joker's message so frightening to us as a society, and particularly us as Christians, I think, because as strong as our faith is, there's always that element where, what if we're wrong? What if there is no meaning? And so we have to sort of grapple with that message of Joker. I think that's one of the things that was so compelling about The Dark Knight, was not so much the physical confrontation that Batman has with Joker, but the mental and emotional confrontations that they have together. I just always go back to that scene where Batman's throttling Joker in the interrogation room over at Gotham City Precinct or wherever. And, you know, it's obvious that Batman's the stronger man.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you see the Joker sort of digging in mentally and emotionally, pushing all of Batman's buttons. And you realize that even though Joker's is getting his keister kicked, he's winning the fight at that particular time. That's a really scary but compelling scene, I think. And I think that's one of the reasons why Joker has held our fascination for such a long time, is because he speaks a worldview that scares us to death, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that the way you described it in the book was Joker was this chaos, and Batman, he is that kind of rigid. Oh no, you were. It was the dichotomy between Catwoman and Batman, where Catwoman is there's no morals,
yeah.
And you can do whatever you want, just do whatever you want. And Batman has this rigid moral code, and that's kind of what attracts the two of them.
Yeah,
is that, but the same kind of thing with Joker and.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For me, it seems like, you know, Catwoman to me feels a little like a much, much milder form of Joker in that it's sort of like, we can do whatever we want to do. It's sort of that sort of postmodern sense in a way where you know, whatever floats your boat is cool. I like stealing jewelry, and you can't judge me for that. You know, that type of attitude. And so I think that sort of her amorality and Batman's rigid morality, they sort of attract each other. With Joker and Batman, I think that it goes two or three steps deeper. It becomes a much darker, much more cosmic type of battle, where we're talking about the idea of purpose and purposelessness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Purpose and chaos, you know, where is there a reason we're here? Is there a reason why we've been placed on this earth? Do our callings matter? Do how we treat each other matter? You know, Batman says yes, and I think that's where Christians come down too. We think that it all matters. And Joker's there in the shadows telling us not necessarily.
Okay, so that said, what are some of your favorite graphic novels then? Some of your favorite Batman graphic novels and why? And I'm wondering, with all this talk about Joker, does Killing Joke make the cut here?
Yeah, Killing Joke is a pretty good graphic novel. I think my two favorite, though, to be honest with you, would be Batman Year One, which I loved, and I actually really liked the Nightfall saga where Bane comes to the forefront. I thought that that was a really, really fascinating arc. And I think one of the reasons why I like it, it's a little bit old school compared to some of the other ones.
Uh-huh.
But I love it because Batman is so Batman within it, if that makes sense. You know, he is pushing. Just for those who might be listening who haven't read the thing, essentially Bane comes to town, lets loose a whole bunch of evildoers, you know, all of Batman's favorite or unfavorite villains, and sort of forces Batman to run through this gauntlet of evildoer after evildoer, throwing them back in prison. It's sort of Bane's way of wearing Batman down for this final confrontation where Bane and Batman face off, and Bane actually breaks Batman's back because he's just so worn down after fighting all these people. But within the story, I tell you what, I think that Batman is as heroic, and I think it illustrates his perseverance and his courage and his desire to push no matter the odds. And it also shows, I think, his weakness, where he refuses to let anyone really help him with this. You know, Robin sometimes pops into the scene and says, let me help you. And Batman just says, no, go away, little kid. And so it becomes sort of a pride thing. And you wonder whether if Batman had actually trusted some of the people who he's, you know, who he's supposed to be working with a little bit more, whether Bane would have gotten off so lucky.
Yeah, that's actually a chapter in your book where you mentioned that for a loner, he has a lot of support. Like,
he really does.
He works with a lot of people. I mean, and you know, they had the old comic that was called Batman Family. You know, you have Batgirl, you have Batwoman, you have Robin, you have Nightwing, you have Batman, you have Alfred, you have Commissioner Gordon.
Got to tell you that when I was 9 years old, 10 years old, those were my favorite. That was my favorite version of Batman. Love the Bat Family, little Bat Dog and everything.
Was Ace?
Yeah, Ace. That's exactly right.
Okay, so here's a guy though who gets kind of short shrift in your book, and that's because he's not in the Nolanverse. As far as we know, I know there are a lot of people speculating that he might be a part of the next movie. But Robin,
mm-hmm.
How would he fit? Now, if he was in your book, how would he fit in there? What would you say about Robin?
You know, to tell you the truth, I stayed away a little bit from Robin just because I didn't know exactly where he fit with kind of the outline that I drew up for the Nolan characters. You know, I think in my book, I kind of suggest that Alfred is sort of the guy who is with Batman through thick and thin. Lucius Fox is a guy who is with Batman, obviously, through everything, but he would walk away should Batman step out of line. And you see the same sort of thing from Commissioner Gordon, where they push each other to, you know, fulfill their callings in a sense, to be the heroes that they're supposed to be. Robin, I think it's a tricky thing. And I think that if I was going to say one thing about Batman and Robin's relationship, it would be that as Christians, we always need to be conscious of passing on what we know to others, to really engage the people around us and try to help them as much as we can through our own experiences, through our own faith. You know, I think that it's important, just as it's important for us to learn from mentors, I think it's important for us to mentor others and to be as free and as open with our knowledge and our understanding of the world as possible. Because it's through that mentorship, I think that we as people can grow and we as Christians can grow. I think that man, when you're talking about Christianity, it's so important to deal with our faith within community, because let's face it, the world is a hard, rough place, you know, and there's a lot of things that as Christians we don't always understand And because of that, we need to rely on other Christians to sort of help us through those times. You know, when you read Paul's letters in the Bible, you know, they're just full of these, obviously, these letters to these communities. And I think that our faith was always designed to sort of manifested in community, where you have people who are there to provide strength when it's needed, to provide, you know, comfort when it's needed, and to provide knowledge and understanding when it's needed as well. So that's a long, long-winded answer to your question, but I think that's probably what I do with it.
One thing I'm surprised about is that Alfred has made it through as long as he had, because Alfred kind of takes on a father figure role with Bruce.
Yeah.
And part of the hero's journey is to lose your father figure and have to step away from him.
Yeah.
And I think with Robin, you've kind of got Batman taking on that father figure role. The mentor relationship that you mentioned is actually fits it a lot better than that father figure.
Well, I think that when you're talking about that father figure, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And you're really right about Alfred, particularly in the Nolan movies, where especially in Batman Begins, he really has to become that father figure, really has to guide wayward Bruce Wayne, who's just angry and embittered and all that kind of stuff, just to give him a little sign that there could be a little bit of hope out there. I love the line in Batman Begins where, you know, Bruce Wayne's, "You'll never give up on me, will you, Alfred?" And Alfred says, "Never." And I think that's kind of a beautiful statement in a way.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it makes that relationship very poignant.
Yeah.
And it makes me glad that he's not dead. You know,
absolutely.
He's survived this far. And,
yeah.
You know, he hasn't gotten any disease that only Mr. Freeze can cure. All right, so I got one last thing to talk about with you, and I got a bone to pick with you, man.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Aquaman. You diss him in your book, man.
Man, you got to admit, Aquaman, that is not a very cool superpower. Talking with seahorses.
Oh, how can you even say that? I look at that power and I think to myself, how awesome would that be? To be able he's not just talking to them, he's commanding them. You know, okay. Batman has a utility belt. Aquaman has an army that covers 2/3 of the Earth.
Okay, so let me give you a little bit of background. I live in Colorado, and we have probably the biggest body of water that we have in the state is really found in someone's bathtub. So, you know, for around here, Aquaman's powers just kind of fall flat. I mean, I just can't imagine him calling anything bigger around here than rainbow trout. And rainbow trout just aren't very fearsome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, of course, you're referencing Super Friends when you're talking about him. And every episode of Super Friends, it felt like they just had to make up some excuse for them to be near a body of water so that Aquaman could have something to do. And that, I'm sure, adds to, you know, some of the issues that people have with him. But actually, he's one of my favorite characters.
Is he really?
He is.
To actually pull out a Aquaman comic book and just start reading it. Because you're right, my main experience with Aquaman is from Super Friends. And Super Friends isn't really the best way to get to know any of these guys, is it?
No, because, you know, I remember watching the credits of Superman or Super Friends, and there's the one shot where Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, and Aquaman are all flying. You know, it's like, wait, this isn't how it works, is it? And
you just wonder whether Tinkerbell is around there, shaking her pixie dust over him or something like that.
But yeah, I mean, the Aquaman comic to start with is the new 52 version, where it's just. The thing about that comic is fans of the character and fans of superheroes, Aquaman's made relevant for both, you know.
Oh, and cool.
It's a really, I really enjoyed that book. But anyway, I mean,
all right, well, I won't
I gotta step up for my Aquaman there. So
I gotta tell you something, you're gonna be very jealous. I work with someone who has Aquaman #1.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. He found it in an attic, you know, his father's attic. And I think that his father used to collect those things and his dad just gave it to him. So yeah. I think he's looking forward to the movie. If they ever make an Aquaman movie, which I understand they are, just because he might be able to sell the comic for a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, you know, they did that Aquaman pilot episode, for that was going to be on the CW, you know, with like in conjunction with Smallville, and it actually isn't bad. I mean, there's some of the things that they have to do, so it's that teen CW demographic, but
the writing's not soggy or anything like that.
So on that really sour note, is that what you have to go out on?
I know. That's a bad way to go.
Oh man.
You could ask me another profound question. I could try to do a little bit better.
Yeah, I'll try. Hey, you know, I will say I marked up your book as I was reading it. And like I said, I didn't want to go just point for point, you know, through all the different things in the book. I did really enjoy this one paragraph here. It was in, which chapter is that here? One of the earlier ones, might have been the first. No, chapter 2. I love this take on superheroes where you say the superhero origin story is almost always tinged by tragedy. Spider-Man loses his uncle, the Hulk loses part of his humanity, Superman loses his whole home world, but a spiritual thread runs through each of these tragedies, bearing just a hint of Christianity's Easter story. Out of death comes life, out of an end, a new beginning. And that's one, you know, I've been thinking about superheroes for years. I've been talking with people about superheroes for years, but that's the first time that I've seen like that kind of take on superheroes as far as the Christian story goes, is just that out of the tragedy comes the rebirth, and out of the pain comes the, you know, the push to a new life. I like that a lot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Really
And I recommend the book to anyone who's listening. Honestly, if you're listening to Strangers and Aliens, it's because we talk about these things in light of the Christian life, and that's what this whole book is just kind of it's an encouragement, and it's an and there's some things in there that cause you to kind of take a look at, okay, well, what am I doing here, you know, and how am I reacting to certain things, and when am I wearing that mask or that, and I love the chapter also on the villains. In fact, that's how I found you, was a Strangers and Aliens listener sent me a link to one of your, it was like an article on a website that was mainly that chapter on all the supervillains from mm-hmm. the Nolan movies. And so I was, oh, wow, this looks really interesting. I got this. This is really cool. I'm going to read this book.
I tell you what, I'm thrilled that one of your listeners did that. I appreciate whoever did that. So
I can't remember. I think it was Hank, because he's always pointing stuff out to us that's really cool. But so I really appreciate you taking the time to come here, talk about your book, talk about just all this superhero stuff. And
well, I had a great time doing it. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
So I am interested in seeing what you think about Dark Knight Rises. And maybe coming back after the movie comes out and just getting your take on it and how did it, you know, did you squirm through the whole thing or, you know,
it's just going to be one of those things where I laughed, I cried, you know, that type of thing. So I would love to. I just give me a holler and I'll be back on. Yeah,
so, all right. Well, thank you very much. And now I'm going to go back to the regular show and we'll close this thing up.
And we're back.
We are. And we're back into the present that was the future of the time when I recorded that in the past.
I'm not going to do that sound effect anymore, though.
Thank you. it was a fun interview, and I hope you liked it. I love doing that kind of thing. Just, you know, some different episodes every once in a while. And that was a great... great guy to talk to. And the book is good. I really do highly recommend it. Steve, buy that book and read it.
I'm on Amazon right now. What is it? Batman on the Streets of God on the Streets
God
of
Gotham. On the Streets of Gotham.
I'm going to capitalize the G in God. God on the Streets of Gotham.
So now we're doing real time ordering on Amazon of the book.
It's used for $8.89.
Buy it new.
It's new for $8.97. I'm paying like 8 cents more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Seriously, Steve, we gotta move on. After that great interview, and now just
I gotta give you something to edit. I mean,
okay. So let's move on. Let's get into our mailbag. Mailbag. Steve, would you like to read our first comment? This is a response to our Batman retrospective episode.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. This is from RC, a big fan, and he writes, interesting trip down Batman Lane. I know I've voiced my opinion on various Batmans before, so no need to reiterate. Still, my favorite is the 89 Batman. I was 13, just in time to go see it, as it was PG-13. I went looking like a total fanboy, because I was, and received ridicule from other teens kicking around outside the theater. But it was everything I had hoped it would be, and did not disappoint. I was interested to hear Ben's thoughts that Christian Bale made an excellent Bruce Wayne. I have the opposite opinion. I think he does an excellent Batman, but made a so-so Bruce Wayne. I didn't feel that he was particularly charismatic as Bruce Wayne. However, he was brooding and seemed to embody many of the motives of the Dark Knight. I do enjoy the two Nolan Batmans, but haven't been inclined to even pick them up on DVD. Batman Begins I found to be pretty interesting. The Dark Knight was interesting to watch once, but for me it was almost too mundane. I wasn't sold on Harvey Dent Two-Face, or should I say, the story didn't invest me enough in him to really pull the heartstrings it should have. I agree with you there, RC. Heath Ledger was a cool Joker, but the setting didn't impress me. The movie stayed dark, and the highs weren't high enough to move me. Not enough contrast? Not saying it was bad at all. I enjoyed it, but at this juncture of time, I am content I saw it once. For The Dark Knight Rises, I have many hopes. However, I was curious at the choice of Bane for the villain. I agree these films have been about Batman rather than his villains, so perhaps that's why they have toned them down. They just feel everyday, like something you'd see on a CSI or similar. I am curious to see how they play Bane. Kind of wish they had gotten someone physically larger, though. While an actor is an actor, there is something to say about physical presence. I realize he bulked up for the role. I think he is still a ways away from Bane that I am familiar with. We will see.
Yeah, I can see why people don't like him as Batman or as... I could see reasons for not liking Christian Bale as both Batman or Bruce Wayne. Right. I just happen to like him playing Bruce Wayne and Batman because I see... And this is a direction and an acting thing with this, and also an editing thing. You can see when he is getting ready to jump into the role of Bruce Wayne or getting ready to jump into the role of Batman. You can see just the shift in the character. And I think Christian Bale does that great, where he's just, okay, now deep breath, and I'm Bruce Wayne now. Hey, everybody, I'm the life of the party. Or, hey, everybody, you're stupid. Get out of my way, you know. And then does the same kind of thing where he's, especially in Batman Begins, just figuring out how do I play Batman? What does it mean for Bruce Wayne to be Batman? So anyway, I think it's good, but I can very much see, especially with the Batman voice that he does.
You like the Batman voice?
I did not like the Batman voice.
No.
Okay. That's one of the reasons why I can see people not liking.
Got it.
You know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
I mean,
although in the first movie, when he was, who was it that was? I think it was Rachel. It might have been Rachel that was looking at him, and she had been under the influence of the Scarecrow's gas, and he was just like all black, and he just had that voice, and you were like, "Oh, that's terrifying."
But yeah, then, but that, you know, are you talking about when Scarecrow was looking at him?
Oh, it might have been Scarecrow.
Yeah, because like it's the full-on makeup and everything, right? Where it's,
yeah,
that was Scarecrow. He's actually holding Scarecrow by the neck,
right?
You know, and like, and I do like that. I mean, that part, but
yeah,
the voice is a little bit over the top for me.
Yeah, I think the best Batmen have two different voices: one for villains and one for people that they're not trying to physically you know, oppress.
And he kind of did that, you know? Like, when he was talking to Rachel that first time when they're in the subway and she can, like, totally see him. Like, he's not in the shadows or anything. And who are you? Like, well, you're looking right at his mouth. Haven't you kissed that mouth before? And, like, don't you remember this guy? But, anyway. Okay, so then we have a message from Hank Harwell. And Hank is, he's a listener from the very beginning.
Hank is, like, my favorite fan.
Your favorite fan of the
yeah,
the case can be made. He's also maybe our only fan, but
well, there's RC.
Yeah, but
who's also right up there. RC is also a good fan of mine. He's one of my favorite fans. I guess they would both be in the top two.
Yeah, and they've been around since early on, and yeah. I appreciate the comments, especially Hank and RC give, but a lot of the comments that we get on our website when we do. Get comments for some of our episodes and stuff like that. I really appreciate that. Which brings us to, like I said, Hank, who said, I remember I was in college when Batman 89 came out. I was an occasional reader of Film Facts magazine, and they had a cover story on the history of Batman on film. I found it very interesting to note that the Batman TV series was actually inspired by the Batman serials of the 1940s. In fact, there were two serials, the Batman 1943 and Batman Robin 1949. According to this site, and there's a link there, which I actually didn't click on. Many of the items we associate with Batman canon apparently were invented by those serials. The Film Facts article indicates that by the early 1960s, these serials were rediscovered, and as they were quickly and cheaply made, they came off as campy, and as such were the inspiration for the campy 1960s Batman TV series. And then he gives a link for ordering it on Amazon.
Yeah, the link to this site goes to batman-on-film.com.
Oh, it gives a history of the 1940 serials there.
There you go.
But, yeah, those serials are... I enjoyed them.
They're fun. Yeah, I mean, you got to take them for what they are, like anything. But you have to remember that you're watching serials from the 1940s. This is very early Batman and Robin. This is, I mean, you know, the costumes, the special effects. It's not going to be Hollywood. You know?
Well, it was Hollywood. It's not going to be current day Hollywood. Not really. I mean, if you look, they're obviously in Hollywood.
They're
but yeah, I really just enjoy serials in general. Especially like the Captain Marvel one.
Yeah.
I keep going back to that one. That's for me is my favorite superhero serial. Just because the effects were actually very cheap, but very well done and almost believable. and I just enjoyed it. But anyway, yeah, so we have those. But we also have some listener feedback that was recorded for us by Peter Franson. He sent us a recording, some of his memories of Batman movies in the past. And so we're going to play that right now.
Hey, guys, this is Peter Franson from the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. Few thoughts on how I've enjoyed or not enjoyed the Batman movies over the years. The Adam West movie, I mean, when I was a kid, that's all we had. That's kind of what we had to cling to. But the more I saw the campiness, the more it infuriated me. And so when Batman came out, the Tim Burton flick, loved it, thought it was the most amazing thing in the world. In retrospect, I do see some shortcomings, some unrealistic aspects, especially with Chris Nolan and what he's done. But I still thought it was a fantastic movie, still think it's a fantastic movie. Batman Returns fell short a little bit. I still thought it was a lot better than most people think it was. But what they lost is returning to the reason that Batman does what he does. We lost all sense of his character and what motivates him. I think for a good Batman movie to work, you've got to constantly return back to those nightmares he has every night of his parents getting shot. This is a sick, disturbed man, and we need to remember that he's hurt and wounded, and that's why he goes out and dresses up like he does and does all this weird crap that he does. Let's see here. Batman Forever. They did return to that a little bit, especially in some of the like, I don't want to say director's cut, but some of the deleted scenes go into that a little bit more, bring us back to the psychology. But those were the only good moments, I think, in that movie. There was lots of things wrong with that. It all started going neon and Schumacher-y. It's scary, scary. And the less said about Batman and Robin, the better. But I'm going to say some stuff anyway. Terrible movie. The worst film of all time when you compare the quality versus the money pumped into it. The worst film ever made. Okay, and then Batman Begins had to grow on me a little bit because I was expecting after movies like the Matrix trilogy for something that was really going to showcase Batman's martial arts prowess and crazy acrobatics and stuff like that. That's not what we got. We got this more grounded, realistic take on Batman. I had to get used to that, but the movie grew on me, and now I think it's a wonderful, phenomenal Batman movie. Dark Knight also had to grow on me a little bit, but not as much. I was disappointed because Chris Nolan is making such a big deal out of like the realism in Batman, how he wants to be realistic, and that's why he went with a Joker who paints his face rather than a guy that was dipped in chemicals. But then at the same time, he's got Batman seeing the world through cell phones, and somehow I don't think that bridging vehicle was originally designed to blow up and turn into a motorcycle. So he's being a little inconsistent with his realism. I would have rather had a Joker who was dipped in a vat of chemicals and really was white skin, green hair kind of thing. Maybe it's a minor quibble, I don't know. We'll see what happens with The Dark Knight Rises. Not thrilled at all about Catwoman's mask. I think they should have gone with the more cat burglar kind of look that she's been sporting in the comic books for a while. But I'm still hopeful. I think he should have recast the Joker and made another Joker movie. I think it's weird and wrong to say that only Heath Ledger can play the Joker as long as Chris Nolan's making movies. I think you deprive people of Joker in a third Batman movie of a trilogy. That's a bad, bad move. But he still might do some amazing things with Bane, and despite Catwoman. We'll see.
So tell us what you really think about Batman and Robin.
I know, don't hold back. I thought it was
worst
interesting.
Worst movie ever made, he says.
Have you seen Battlefield Earth? I'm not asking you to. I don't want you to. I just don't know if you have to put that in the mix. Battlefield Earth. Worst movie ever. But the thing is there's always even with bad movies, you can say, you know, okay, well, that's sort of campy. So if you like camp, you like that. Or, you know, if you really enjoy, you know, this type of movie, whatever, even if it's something you don't like, you know, even if it's something that's really out of your whole thing. But there's no category of person that I could recommend this movie to at all. Even if I said, if you like bad movies, I would still urge you not to see this. It's just that bad.
And I think we need to rewatch it.
No.
Yeah. And do an episode about it.
I can't rewatch it.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to Battlefield Earth. I should never have gotten you started on that.
But I understand, no, but Batman and Robin, horrible. Very, very bad.
Okay, so let's talk about his last point, though. The Joker. Joker is not, obviously, is not in Dark Knight Rises because Heath Ledger died. And a lot of people are saying, you know, that it's keeping it pure or keeping it, you know, in honor of him, not bringing it back.
They recast Rachel from the first movie to the second movie.
Yeah, you're right. They did do that. But the thing is, she wasn't memorable in Batman Begins. It wasn't like, oh, she did such an incredible, incredible job that it just wowed everybody. And I see what Peter's saying about, you know, why can't you? Yeah. But I don't think I would feel... I don't think I would like the movie as much if they tried to recast him.
Yeah, I think you're going to lose a lot of people who were like the big Heath Ledger fans, the big Heath Ledger pushers, the ones that went to see Dark Knight because of Heath Ledger. You're going to lose a lot of those people. But at the same time, I don't see a big problem with it personally myself, except for the fact that you're going to lose all those people.
Now, have you seen The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus?
No.
Now that was, you know, most people say Dark Knight is Heath Ledger's last film, but this is actually his last film.
Right.
And it, you know, it's directed by Terry Gilliam. Mm-hmm. And he plays a part in the movie which in the movie you step through these different places and you go into these different imaginary worlds, we'll call them. And they filmed all the real world stuff in London with Heath, but then he died. And so they didn't know what to do. You know, they had half a movie.
Right.
And what do they do? And this has already happened to Terry Gilliam once, where he was doing a movie called The Man Who Shot Don Quixote or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the guy who played Don Quixote was thrown from a horse. Their sets were destroyed by a storm. And they had filmed, you know, part of the movie, but they just couldn't get back on their feet. And so here the same kind of thing was happening. So what they did was they brought in for these imaginary world parts. The Heath character is played by Johnny Depp, is played by, I can't even remember all the people. Colin Farrell, maybe? I don't remember now.
Wow.
I liked it. I liked the movie in general. And adding that element was kind of interesting. But you know who else starred in that movie?
Who?
Andrew Garfield.
Uh-huh.
Joker and Spider-Man in a movie together. Spidey. Next episode will be our response to Batman The Dark Knight Rises. Dr. Jace will be back.
Dun, finally, dun, dun.
To add some sanity to this. Well, I guess we aren't really insane.
I would doubt our sanity, but
he will add some sanity to this doubted sanity. it doesn't make any sense. Okay,
it's an undoubted sanity. How about that?
Yeah. And he's missed. I think that we need him back. We need that third part of our Trinity before we say goodbye. I did want to tell you, we have a new way you can send us voice messages. If you want to record your voice responding to us about anything we talk about, or maybe suggesting new topics, which, by the way, we would love it if you suggested some topics for us. Really love it if you would do that. But yeah, you can click on the send a voicemail little tab on our website. And this will automatically, if you have a microphone ready to go, it will record you. And you can send us a voicemail. Again, we do ask you to keep it around 3 minutes. And I think I found the best way to send that kind of feedback is to actually have it written beforehand. So you're not, you know, spending, you know, not having a lot of, what do you call them? It's that crutch type of verbal pause thing. I think we've taken the bit too long.
We could go a little further.
We could, but I don't know if we want to. It does get you away from any verbal pauses, and it allows you to be more succinct and pack more into the 3 minutes. But yeah, I'm really excited. I found this thing looking at the Audacity Podcast website. And thought, that is really cool. He's got that right there. I am going to use that. So we are. Beyond that, it was a pleasure talking with you, Steve, however short. And we do want to give one more thank you to Paul Acey. If you go to our website in the show notes, we will have links to his website and also links to where you can purchase the book.
Yes, thank you, Paul.
And that's it. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Steve McDonald. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. We invite you to join the conversation by visiting our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at Strange and Alien, or like us on our Facebook page. If you'd like to email us directly, our email is podcast@strangersandaliens.com. And once again, thanks for listening.
Which is your favorite Batman sound effect? Is it bam or is it wham?